You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Don Guerra.
And I'm Sarah Vaughn. This is the Daily Local News for Tuesday, August 15th, 2017.
Well, what really necessitated the change in the structure of the project and necessitated the state taking over were some challenges with the developer in terms of meeting timelines for the project.
The Indiana Department of Transportation officially takes over the construction of Interstate 69. WFHB News Director Wes Martin talks with NDOT and Indiana Finance Authority officials later in today's program.
Also coming up in the next hour, Kathleen Weber talks about getting off the bench and throwing your hat in the ring on Everyday People, a weekly segment aimed at improving the lives of older adults and people with disabilities in Monroe County. But first, these local headlines. A week after Donald Trump was elected President of the United States, George Nathaniel Stang sprayed the walls of St. David's Episcopal Church in Brown County with a swastika, anti-gay epithets, and Heil Trump. In May, Stang, who is publicly gay, confessed to spray painting the church in 2016. In a conversation with Doug Bowder, director of the LGBTQ Culture Center at Indiana University, published yesterday by the Herald Times, Stang said that he is ashamed of his false flag attack.
Back in November of 2016, I committed an act I'm very ashamed of, and I'm trying to do some things to make right. I vandalized a church in Bean Blossom, Indiana with pro-Trump and anti-LGBT graffiti. This was shortly after now President Trump's election, and I found myself in a very disturbed place and kind of at the confluence of a lot of difficult life turns. It was a very misguided act and saw me kind of misplacing a lot of frustration that arises from the depression I struggle with, as well as the anxiety I was feeling around the time of Trump's election as a gay man myself.
Stang is charged with institutional criminal mischief, a misdemeanor punishable by up to a year in jail and a $5,000 fine. He is not charged with committing a hate crime.
It actually ended up being, I did it on the Saturday before a church service, though of course the next morning on Sunday. I bought a can of spray paint from a local hardware store and drove down there, and I decided to spray paint things that I thought the most perfectly infuriating straw man would spray paint. Like what the villain in my head would say. I don't know, at the time I was feeling very scared and frightened and like I could almost be attacked any moment, I suppose. I'm not really exactly sure why I did what I did. I mean, lots of things kind of came together, but I wanted it to be the voice of kind of what I imagined this ultimate fear of the future to be, I guess.
The 27-year-old, who was the church's organist at the time, said that he did not commit the crime out of hatred, but out of fear, depression, and loneliness.
Like many people, I was, you know, had lulled myself into this very kind of safe place. I was very confident about what the future would look like. And so, of course, whenever he did get elected, when he won the election, that was very shocking and mm-hmm. upsetting. Mm-hmm. And I immediately saw the fallout of it. The world felt immediately like a different place, even just the next morning. I spent some time, hearing my friends' worries and concerns and actually watching someone very close to me spend a lot of time crying mm-hmm. and all these things really just put me in an unusual headspace. I was holding on to a lot of the feelings I had at the time and not sharing them. I know lots of people were kind of socially grieving at the time, but I held to myself.
You were doing it within yourself.
I was doing it with myself when I really should have been sharing.
Stang wrote a confession to authorities, penned a letter to the Herald Times, and spoke with a reporter.
Brian Schrader was working on the case. He's with the Brown County Sheriff's Department.
Okay.
He visited me one day and let me know that there was some relatively significant evidence against me, which included having been able to track that my cell phone the night before went to and from Bean Blossom. Around this time that he began talking to me about this, I was kind of starting to see my mental state deteriorate even more. And, you know, I think began to realize that it's because I've been hiding this thing. And so I immediately took basically that prompt and confessed and provided a statement, which even now looking back on, that statement was not how I feel almost at all anymore now. The act of confessing was kind of the cork coming off the bottle, and then everything came out, and then I could start to process it realistically.
Heads of several LGBTQ communities like Bloomington Pride and Spencer Pride condemned Stang's vandalism, emphasizing that such false flag actions undermine credible concerns about the safety of the LGBTQ community. Stang is reportedly working with St. David's staff and the Brown County community towards reconciliation.
The Monroe County Public Safety Tax Committee will fund 6 more dispatchers for the county's central emergency dispatch. Committee member Scott Oldham, who works for the Bloomington Police Department, described the staffing situation during the committee's meeting on Thursday as dire.
The 6 dispatchers are desperately needed. The folks in central dispatch are overworked. They need help. Their overtime is mandatory, and that's really starting to hurt. Quite frankly, I can't say enough about what they do in there. I wouldn't want that job. Every public safety run in this county starts there, at least those controlled by the entities that we're involved with. And quite frankly, the funding after that for their recommendations for radios and for the computers, the MDTs, I think, are appropriate. And in fact, I don't see any of the fire departments saying, no, we don't want that. It's just some of them may or may not have had another priority. And as I said before, I think up front, the betterment of the entire county was something we were after, and this would benefit the entire county at once.
Emergency dispatch will receive nearly $3 million in public safety taxes for 2018, more than this year's allocations to emergency dispatch and area township fire departments combined. Out of the $2.87 million, $800,000 will fund radios and mobile data terminals for a project designed to improve communication between township fire departments and the central dispatch. Council members Cheryl Munson and Isabel Piedmont Smith voted against awarding the funding. Munson said most township fire departments listed other priorities when submitting their funding requests.
One of the requests from Van Buren Township specifically noted that the communications radios and mobile data terminals were their first priority. All the other fire departments said their proposals listed the priorities that they had, and those priorities were greater than the communications that was proposed by Central Dispatch.
Munson suggested grant funding for the purchase of radios should be explored. Piedmont Smith said the estimate for the communications project was at least $150,000 above actual costs.
Another factor is that last year we all agreed that the Washington Township Fire Department, as part of the Northern Monroe Fire Territory, should be funded, and then we just didn't have a mechanism to do that. I still believe that that's important to the overall safety of residents in our community. It's going to be the other side of I-69. It's going to be even more important than it was in the past. I would like to fund that.
Piedmont Smith then proposed a reduced appropriation for Central Dispatch in order to carve out funding for some township needs, but her motion failed. Councilmember Dorothy Granger voted in favor of giving Emergency Dispatch the increased appropriation, but she also showed her support for Washington Township by making a motion to give $50,000 to build a fire station.
I'm just remembering our disappointment last year when we could not allocate funds to Washington Township, and this year we have that opportunity, and I would just like to follow through on that.
Granger's motion failed on a vote of 4-3. Giving a central emergency dispatch a larger slice of the public safety tax pie means other entities will receive fewer tax dollars next year. Equipment and staffing needs at area township fire departments were left unfunded by the end of Thursday's meeting. Council member Cheryl Munson told the Public Safety Tax Committee she was disappointed.
I know the fire departments are very disappointed. I'm disappointed because I believe you know best what you need for your the most successful operation that you can provide. And I hope the communications equipment that'll come your way will be helpful to you. I do know that for several of the townships, they are going to be challenged by not having radio communication that can reach all portions of their service area. And this is a big public safety issue, in my view. And I hope Mr. Schemmer and others will work very hard to get radio communication distributed so that the radios that are to be purchased can actually be used throughout the whole county.
The public safety tax, which went into effect last October, has raised $7.5 million for law enforcement, fire, and emergency medical transportation operations. Early estimates indicate the tax could bring in roughly $300,000 more in 2018. The City Council is the next body that has to approve the funding of the Central Emergency Dispatch.
The emerald ash borer has been wreaking havoc on Indiana ash trees since 2004. The invasive Asian beetle is responsible for widespread destruction of ash tree populations across the state, and the Indiana Parks Alliance is warning Hoosiers that if aggressive action isn't taken to combat the insect, almost all of Indiana's ash trees will be gone within the next 10 years. Indiana Parks Alliance President Tom Homan says the organization is taking donations that will go towards treating ash trees against the deadly emerald ash borer.
There's some parts of the state where it hasn't really done too much damage yet. The north is pretty much wiped out. So it's mainly in the a little bit in the central, west central, and southwest, and spotty here and there, wherever we can find some ash trees and those parks or nature preserves that aren't past the point of saving. You can have a little bit of damage in if it gets to about, you start seeing die-off in the branches in the trees, and once you see about a third of the tree dead, it's probably too late to save it. It gets iffy.
To treat the trees, a special insecticide is injected into holes drilled near ground level. The insecticide kills emerald ash borers as it is drawn through the roots. Homan said the insecticide is safe for pollinators like honeybees and that it takes around $200 to treat an ash tree for up to 3 years. Homan says the ash tree is a vital indigenous species in Indiana.
First of all, they're a timber tree. They're not a not like oak or anything, but certainly the most famous use probably is for any sports fan is for baseball bats. That's the tree of choice for using that for making baseball bats. And it is used in for furniture and other hardwood uses. It's a good tree for that use. It also is important, like any native plant or tree in the ecosystem. It plays a big part in that. They make up about 10 to 20% of the species in the forest, so you can imagine wiping that out. That's a big, big factor.
If ash trees continue to die off at the current rate, the state is looking at a loss of $10 to $20 billion, according to an Indiana Parks Alliance press release. Homan hopes the Parks Alliance campaign will stop the devastation of emerald ash borers and benefit future trees.
If we save these ash trees, they're a seed source for the next generation coming up and can provide the ash trees in the woods again. And then hopefully some of those ash trees might develop a tolerance for the emerald ash borer where it's not going to kill them the next time.
Parks Alliance hopes to raise $20,000 within the next few months. More information can be found at indianaparksalliance.org. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Don Guerra.
And I'm Sarah Vaughn. The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
The Indiana Department of Transportation has finalized its takeover of the Interstate 69 Section 5 corridor from Bloomington to Martinsville. WFHB News Director Wes Martin spoke with NDOT spokesman Scott Manning and Indiana Finance Authority spokeswoman Stephanie McFarlane about the state's arrangements.
Yesterday, the Indiana Department of Transportation announced that it has successfully taken over the Interstate 69 project from private partners. The announcement marks the end of NDOT's experimentation with public-private partnerships, at least for now. The state is taking over Section 5, the only piece of the interstate currently under construction, from financially troubled Spanish firm Isolux Corsan. Previous sections of the interstate were solely under NDOT's control. NDOT spokesman Scott Manning reiterated a project completion for Section 5, which runs from Bloomington to Martinsville, of August of next year.
Well, what really necessitated the change in the structure of the project and necessitated the state taking over were some challenges with the developer in terms of meeting timelines for the project, really separate from what's happened with their parent company. You know, the primary concerns that the state wanted to address was some of the schedule slip by the developer and some of the payment issues to subcontractors. You know, those were issues that by the state taking over the project, we can make sure that those were mitigated immediately and get the project back on track, moving forward on the timeline that it needs to, and making sure that the companies performing the work are paid accordingly.
While Manning acknowledged repeated delays along the I-69 corridor, which were caused by disputes between Isolux Corsan and developers on the ground, he says those problems are in the past now that the state has taken over.
The developer did have some contractual disputes throughout the course of the project with the contractors that they were working with over the life of the project that did result in some delays to the schedule. How we ensure that moving forward, we don't have those same challenges with the state being in direct control of the project, NDOT has direct contractual relationships with all of the contractors performing the work. So that will allow the state, as the owner of the project, to make sure that those companies are paid, and so that will allow work to progress on the schedule that we've all agreed upon.
Indiana Finance Authority spokeswoman Stephanie McFarlane said part of the state's takeover of the project would include the defeasement of Isolux Corsan's bond holdings. McFarlane said the sale and reissuance of those bonds would result in a capital surplus for the state, partly due to Isolux Corsan's poor credit rating.
The cost savings would come primarily from the fact that the state's highway revenue bonds that they're going to be issuing here in the next couple of weeks would actually be AA+ rated, whereas the private activity bonds that the developer had issued were BB and BB-. So their interest rate was higher. So the state would be paying a lower interest rate, and their bonds would actually be on a lower amount than what the developer had originally issued.
Manning echoed McFarland's statement and said the state has the capital already allocated to finance I-69 Section 5 to completion.
The project, as it stands now with the state in control, the work is about 60% complete. So the remaining portion will be financed by the state as part of the financial closeout of the termination agreement between the state and I-69 development partners. The state issued highway revenue bonds to close out the private activity bonds that were issued on the part of the developer. So the bondholders that were part of the original agreement have been paid in full. The state has now issued highway revenue bonds to finance the remainder of the project. So it is funded, and everything is in place now with funding and contractual relationships, as I said, to ensure that we complete the project by next August, if not sooner.
Manning said the state is advancing the project at an aggressive pace and cautioned drivers to be aware of lane closures and construction activities along the Section 5 corridor, including activities going on this winter.
So I think what residents and business owners and Hoosiers that use the I-69 corridor every day should be aware of is that work is going to be continuing in the corridor at an aggressive pace. be aware, be mindful that there will be periodic lane closures. There will be people working in the corridor, so the reduced pay attention to signs indicating lane closures, reduced speed limits. Please be aware of all of those factors as you're driving in the work zone every day. But what's important to point out is that while we're looking at August of 2018, if not sooner, for a completion date for the entire project, we do have milestones within that timeline that we're coming up on very quickly. We have a goal of having at least four lanes of traffic open at all times in the Bloomington area coming up by the end of August. So we're quickly approaching on that, and certainly having four lanes of traffic open in both the two lanes of traffic in each direction on I-69 through Bloomington will help to alleviate some of the congestion issues and make that part of the corridor easier to traverse. We're also expecting to see progress happening really quickly on the remaining overpasses and interchanges in the Bloomington area. So while that date of August of 18 is a year away for total completion, we'll have a lot of intermediate milestones that will be completed here in the next few months, and even some in the next few weeks, that will make driving in the corridor easier, more convenient. So a lot to look forward to on the project, and obviously a year from now we'll be celebrating a completely completed project.
We were speaking with NDOT spokesman Scott Manning. Previously, you heard IFA spokeswoman Stephanie McFarland. For WFHB News, I'm Wes Martin.
Support for WFHB comes from Bloomington Pride, presenting Pride Fest on August 26th in downtown Bloomington. The festival celebrates a LGBTQ community and culture and features a Pride rally, education workshops, live performances, family activities, and local vendors. Details on Facebook and at bloomingtonpride.org/pridefest.
Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet voice and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Coming up next, WFHB's weekly community resources segment, Everyday People.
Don't mess around.
Welcome to Everyday People, improving the lives of older adults and people with disabilities in Monroe County.
Everyday resources for everyday people, connecting our community by sharing resources you need, want, and probably don't know about.
Hi, today we have Kathleen Weber with Better Day Club. Hi, Kathleen, welcome.
Hey, ladies, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. So, what is Better Day Club?
Well, we are an adult day program. We meet 3 to 4 afternoons a week with a specific focus of providing support and community for folks who are living with Alzheimer's disease or a related dementia. So we're a place to belong where people can feel like they have their own space.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the community sees that as, you know, respite for caregivers.
Sure.
But what I really see it as is a place where many of the people that I've worked with for years who have expressed frustration with living with dementia
mm-hmm.
can come together and find friends and stay engaged in their community, to have a support system, to stay as well as they possibly can be, and to have a sense of purpose and accomplishment, and use their wisdom and their resilience to share with our staff and our students and our community members that come in. So we do that through speech therapy, through art therapy, through music therapy, and through a whole lot of other volunteers and community members that come in, and some programming with the daycare that's right across the parking lot from us.
So let's talk a little bit the why. What started this wonderful?
Our community did not have an adult day program for about 17 years.
Mm-hmm.
So we had one a long time ago. It closed for a variety of reasons. And before I started Better Day Club 4 years ago, I served in a role as Alzheimer's educator at what was then Bloomington Hospital. Mm-hmm. Dana Thompson is in that role now and does a great job.
Right.
But over those 7 years or so, I had lots of conversations with folks who were either caring for a family member, and they would call and they'd say, my mom has Alzheimer's. She's been doing really well. She's been living at home with my dad. He's been taking great care of her, but she's bored to death. My dad needs a little bit of a break, and my mom misses her friends. And I called to get a list of the adult day programs in town. Can you give me a list? And I'd take a big deep breath, and I'd say, I'm so sorry. We don't have any of those. I wish we did. Mm-hmm. Why don't you come in and talk, and we'll figure out what might be a good fit for your mom to help her stay connected. And we'd put a plan together. And every time I'd hang up the phone, I'd think, somebody ought to do this. And I thought that for years. And then I found myself driving around town looking, would that place work? Would this place work? What would it look like? What would it feel like? What would we do there? And so it just became really clear after a long time that the somebody was me. And I appreciate very much Doug Johnson from Comfort Keepers. Doug stepped up and said, let me help you do this. Mm-hmm. And he provided space. He provided then a renovated space. And we really worked together to kind of get that started. And then went our separate ways. And he's still super supportive of the program. But he really helped me see the bigger vision. Yeah. And so I'm really grateful for that. And as a result, we've been able to really help and support a lot of folks. So the other reason I started that is because through my work at the hospital and meeting people at Memory Clinic, they were living with Alzheimer's disease. And those people would come to me and say, I'm bored and my husband does not get it. I'm frustrated and my family is not hearing me. I need a place where I can meet people and talk about this and continue to stay connected. I can't volunteer. Now they've told me I can't drive. And so we are that place. So
how can people reach you if they want more information?
BetterDayBloomington.com, or they can give us a call at 812-822-1217. And we would love to talk with you. And if we're not your place, we'll help you find your place.
Oh, that's great. Thank you so much, Kathleen.
Thank you, guys.
Kathleen with Better Day Club, thank you for the work that you do.
Thanks for joining us on Everyday People. Tune in next week for more information and resources that connect everyday people to everyday resources. For WFHB, I'm Courtney Stewart.
And I'm Stacey Goffinet.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Arjun Balastadram, Cole Stimson, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Wes Martin.
Everyday People is produced by Courtney Stewart and Stacey Goffinet. Our engineer is Megan Wade. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughn.
And I'm Don Guerra. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast as well as all other WFHB news programming online at WFHB.org.
And you can be part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@WFHB.org.
If you use iTunes, you can have this show delivered directly to you. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
Stay tuned for Interchange, Bloomington Community Radio's longest-running public affairs program, coming up next on WFHB.